Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem, another fireside chat for you good folks. Back with the man, the myth, the legend, Robbie the Fire Bernstein, King of the Cocks. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. Can't complain. Your okay seemed a little bit less encouraging. You hanging in there, buddy?
You know, it's a day-by-day thing. There's some days I get a ton done, and I don't mind it that much. And then there's some days where I can't believe that this is life.
Yeah, it is. It is a very surreal feeling. It has been from the very beginning. Sometimes I don't know about you, but I'll just have moments where I'm like, no fucking way this is all really still happening. Like,
yeah.
Really? It just seems so bizarre. It seems so crazy to me that we would do this. And I, you know, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about recently is just how comfortable our generation is and how comfortable life in general is, even through all this. I mean, we're going through this whole like crazy thing and people are losing their jobs and there's like fucking, you know, I'm like really like, holy shit, this is intense. I got to make sure I protect my wife and my daughter. I got to make sure we're always stocked up on food, you know? And then like, I was at the grocery store the other day because I stocked up a lot, like just, I got like cans and reserves and like, we could get through a while if we had to, but then I don't want to go through that shit. So I keep going back to the grocery store to get little more things. And I was there the other day and you're walking around the grocery store and everyone's got masks on. It's kind of this intense feeling, like everybody's scared. But then at the same time, I'm still like, okay, excuse me. I see lots of pulp and no pulp, but I need some pulp orange juice. Is there anyone who can help me here? Because I really can't. I can't drink the lots of pulp, and I need a little bit of pulp. I can't go no pulp. So also, this is from concentrate. So, you know what I mean? Like, you're still kind of used to the standard of living.
I know it's survival times, but I need just the right amount of pulp.
I mean,
that's surviving for me. If I'm going to get vitamin C and orange juice, it's got to be the right amount of pulp.
Yeah, exactly. I want to enjoy it still. But it is, it does seem to me like I remember my my grandfather, for whatever reason, you know, as I've told people before, my grandfather was a refugee from Germany, and he was a fucking a Jew who was a refugee from Germany at a not great time to be a Jew. And he was World War II vet, fought in the war after he came here. But years later, after all that, there was one time he had a factory job. That's what he did his whole life. And there was one time that he cut like two of the very like tips of his finger off on some machine in a factory.
And he just kept working. He didn't give a shit.
I think he might have taken 2 days off. And then just, it was just like right back to work. No complaining, no bitching. It was just like, yeah, shit happens. I don't know what to tell you. Get back to fucking work. There was no thought of like workman's comp or like any of it. It just wasn't even a thought. Like no one cared. Go ahead.
My dad had some crazy story where they had found his grandmother and she had fallen down the stairs. And like, it was like 3 days later and she was just in the house and was like broken hip and just not a complaint. No complaint. Yeah. Like, just, yeah, I've been here for broken hip 4 days. Haven't moved much, but it's great. It's nice to see you. You want there, that Hershey's yes. chocolate bar?
Right. There was no expectation of comfort the way there is today. Like, it was like, yeah, that's life. Life is hard. And then sometimes you die. I don't know what that's life, you know? And we don't have that at all in our generation. And that's why I think that even when Governor Cuomo said that fucking ridiculous thing, which I know a whole lot of people have said too, but where he said, if these measures can save one life, then they will have been worth it. We just don't have the stomach anymore to be like, what? No. If someone's going to die, they're going to die. And so, of course, nobody had the stomach to say, this is a bad virus. I guess, some people are going to get it. Some people are going to get sick. Some people are going to die. That sucks.
I think a big part of that is because government's pretending like we have the financial funds to mitigate the risk.
Yes.
And so we can afford to operate in this way. Whereas back then, government wasn't as large. They didn't lie to people. There was rationing during World War II. People understood, like, we can't have everything. We're living in a false reality now.
Yeah, that's right. It's because governments are so huge and so influential on everyday life, and we don't have the stomach for suffering, and we don't have any understanding of economics. So it's like, oh no, well, we can just make all those bad things go away, and we'll just shut down the economy and cut everybody checks. And people are like, yeah, that seems more reasonable. But no politician has the courage to just be like, nope, you know what, this is going to cost a lot, but people are going to die, but that's that.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you and I got into it in the last episode we did, and you had some of the firm numbers. I saw an article in the Post. It was like going through the death rates in New York City. Firstly, that giant boat that they brought in from the Navy, they're already sending it off. They don't need it anymore. Death rate was like 0.03%, and like 90% of cases under 60 without pre-existing conditions were full recovery. And then I also saw this, there was an article in the Journal with this guy from Stanford who at the beginning, and he's like the expert on models. He was like, these models are wrong. You're going to shut down the economy and cause a lot of deaths because of shutting down the economy. This is just wrong. And like, they went fucking nuts about that. But there needs to be a real conversation about these models moving forward, because the news just running with, hey, there's a science model here and take this as fact. I mean, that's the scam. We pointed this out at the beginning that we've seen that scam with global warming, and for some reason we were more concerned this time. They kind of got us. But there needs to be some sort of debate series over these models, because like, are they flawless? Is there, you know what I mean? There's a lot there.
Yeah, well, here's the issue is that, first of all, the epidemiologists who didn't support the models to begin with, there's actually a large portion of epidemiologists who don't support models at all. Like, they're like, listen, we really can't use models to predict the future. There's too many variables that, like, they just don't buy into it at all, let alone that we should enact government policy based on a few models. They would think this is crazy. But all of those voices have been very, maybe silenced isn't the right word, but they certainly haven't been amplified. And they're not the ones who you see up next to the governors talking, and they're not the ones on television, and they're not, those aren't the people they're listening to. Now, people who are interested and are skeptical of the narrative can find them online, but then your average, normie person is like, what? That's not science. I haven't heard anything about that. But the truth is, there were a lot of them who disagreed with this from the very beginning. And a lot of, there's a lot of epidemiologists who have been saying that, and virologists and scientists who have been saying, what you really want to do is quarantine the sick. You don't quarantine the healthy. And you maybe quarantine people who are at high risk, but you don't quarantine everybody else. But then even in a broader sense than that, let me just switch ears. In a broader sense than that, an epidemiologist is in no position to speak with expertise over whether we should have a lockdown or not. That, I mean, in one very limited sense, like what effect it would have on the virus, maybe they can speak to that. But there's lots of other costs involved that are just very difficult for any one person to really claim expertise in. I mean, because you could also hear from a mental health professional, a psychiatrist. You could also hear from an economist. You could also hear from a sociologist. I mean, there's like a lot of different people who could talk to different areas of costs versus benefits of this whole lockdown. And it's next to impossible to weigh them all out, but we're not doing any of that. there's just this knee jerk, like, listen to the epidemiologist. And by that, I mean the five that I like who are prescribing this lockdown. And so that's a big problem, that it's very hard to get a full account of what everything will be. And then you have the guys like Cuomo, like I played on the last podcast that I had Malice on, this response Cuomo has when he's asked about the protesters, and they're like, well, these people are saying they need to work. They're running out of money. They got to go to work. They have, you know, they have mortgages to make and kids to support and fucking food to buy and all this shit. And he's like, the virus is death. Okay. So economic hardship is bad, but death, that's worse. And I guess on some level, if you're speaking to a simpleton or someone who's just not thinking deeply about this, you go, oh yeah, okay, death is worse than economic hardship. But first of all, the virus isn't death. It's a very low percentage of people who get the virus actually die from it. It's not clear exactly what that is. Some estimated at 0.01, some estimated at 0.03, but it's not like the virus equals death. For the vast, vast, vast majority of people, the virus doesn't equal death. For a big chunk of them, it doesn't even equal symptoms. So there's that, but it's also just not, it's not so clear that death is always the worst thing that can happen. Like, it's just not that clear. It's, I mean, you know, it sounds fucked up if you say that in the middle of a Twitter, you know, battle, and you're each getting three sentences off and someone can go, ah, look how horrible you are. But is it really true that if there's a 90-year-old who's got underlying conditions, that that person's death is worse than, I don't know, say families just spending a year apart from each other? I don't know that that's clear. Now, that person's already gotten to live. They've had their dreams and aspirations and hopes. They've had their fun. They've had their everything. You know, like, I don't know that it's that clear that robbing hundreds of millions of people of their humanity to a large degree is necessarily worse than an old person dying. And I know that sounds kind of cold, but these are difficult decisions.
And I think the other thing is, as they are difficult decisions, everyone should be able to make them for themselves. And specifically here, when it comes to, it's really a risk assessment. Hey, is my risk of getting sick worse than the risk of, I know I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage in a month, or I know my business is going to fold, and then I know that there's going to be economic hardships from that because I'm not going to be able to pay for my health insurance, and then if I get sick, I'm definitely dying. Yeah. So yeah. It's like you can lead any train of thought to there will be death there. That's why you're making risk assessments like, well, how do I prevent that? And for some people, it might be, hey, I better get back to work.
And the funny thing is that people tend to, because this is, and this happens in general, it happens with politics every 4 years for the presidential race, but there are these things that most people don't think about on a day-to-day basis. They're, you know, in their own world. And I don't mean that in a negative sense at all. I mean, they're worried about their family and their friends and their job and their social life and, you know, things that are important. That's what makes us human beings. But they don't think about a lot of these other things. They're just kind of, they're taken for granted, or they're under the surface. They're not really deeply, you know, processed. And then all of a sudden their attention goes to it, and it's very easy for them to, like, to demagogue the situation. And so we don't think about the fact that there are always risks in life. There are these risks that are all around us. And all the time you make a decision of how much risk you're willing to tolerate. You know, but if you were to say, like, look, when I had a, my daughter was born in December. So we have a winter baby. And when you have a baby who's born in the winter, you're concerned about the flu. Like, that's a thing that you don't really, as just like a guy who, you know, my whole life, I've never really worried about the flu. But when you have a baby, you do, because the flu can kill babies. It can make them very sick. It's dangerous. But if I were to say to somebody when my daughter was born, like, no one can meet her. My family, my friends, nobody can meet her because I'm worried about the flu. Most people would be like, okay, that's a little bit ridiculous. I mean, you know, people should wash their hands. People should, you know, you take a few precautions. But the idea that, like, what, her grandparents aren't going to meet her, that her uncles and aunts and nieces and nephews and cousins, like, they're not going to ever know who she is, that doesn't really make sense. Most people would agree with that. And they wouldn't demagogue it to go, you would risk your baby's health by introducing her to her grandmother. It's like, well, no, we all understand that. Yes, there's a certain amount of risk that you have to say, okay, I'm going to be comfortable with that risk because I got to live my life. We all have to live our lives. We have to be human beings. If we lived our life with zero risk, there's almost no point in living. And likewise, with things like this, with the coronavirus, you have to think about how much risk you're comfortable with. But the only way to do that is to get an accurate sense of what the risk is. And if people are making it out like, okay, if there was a, if you know, let's say me kissing my daughter was a 1 out of 100 chance that she could get sick. Well, I'm just not going to kiss my daughter then for a long time. If it's 1 out of 100,000, of course I'm going to give my daughter a kiss. I'm going to live my life. You know what I mean? Like, that people don't like to think about the complexity of these situations, but that's what it always is in life. Now, think about how insane someone would sound if they'd say, I won't get in a car. I will not get in a car because there's a chance that I could die in a car or get hurt in a car. You'd be like, that's a little bit crazy. Like, that we would all view that as a neurotic person. But when it comes to COVID, because everyone, this is stuff that people don't really think about, and now they're focused on it, it's like, well, if you take any risk, you're an evil person, or you're just stupid, or you're not looking at the science. It's more complicated than that.
Yeah, and I think you and I think we mentioned this on the phone, but we're starting to see interesting conversations about freedom being infringed upon by government. People are actually having the government impose on their freedoms. There are people that just want to go to the beach right now, and they're like, this is crazy, I can't go to the beach. There are people that are like, I want to open up my business. Government saying they can't open their business, even though they haven't received their checks, they're not getting those stimulus bills, or there are businesses they put in for like all of those, you know, those supposed social programs, they didn't get approved for any of them. And they're like, all right, then I got to reopen my business, and they're being told that they can't. And this is going to lead to a real conversation of like, well, what role is government supposed to have? I don't like when they're, you know what I mean? It's like, this is a unique opportunity where people that don't usually think about these ideas are starting to realize, do we really want government to have this power?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And those people who you're mentioning, they're thinking about what I was just saying as well, which is the risk that they're comfortable taking. And I think a lot of people who aren't in that situation maybe don't get it. I'm not exactly in this situation, but I can certainly empathize with it. Whereas if you got a couple kids and you got a small business that you're running and you're like, well, listen, this is how I support my family. And someone like Cuomo is like, well, just hang on for this check. And he's like, and then what? I'm just dependent on the government for the rest of my life. Like, yeah, it's a little bit of a risk for me to go out and open my business, but I'm more comfortable with that risk than I am with the risk of not being able to provide for my children. And then heading, you know, you lose your business right now. Let's say you're a business owner, you lose your business and you're like, okay, so now I got to figure out what I'm going to do heading into what's surely going to be a devastated economy with tens of millions of people out of work, all looking for jobs, a very difficult competitive job market. That's a risk also. And so people are weighing these risks. And to your point, yeah, we are used to seeing a slow erosion of liberty in this country, but that's not what we've been dealing with over the last 2 months. What we've been dealing with is an incredibly rapid erosion of liberty, and to the point where the government is telling you you're not allowed to do things that would have been inconceivable just a couple of months ago. The idea that they're telling you you can't open, you can't go to work, you can't go to the park, you can't, you know, be on the road in some states if you're not essential, at least is what they're saying. I don't know how much they're enforcing that. But yeah, there's no question people are going to start thinking about a lot of issues in different ways.
Did you see the stuff with the CNN Cuomo running into the biker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sure did. Let me tell you something. This whole Cuomo thing, and I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, it reeks of bullshit. It just reeks of bullshit. I'm not saying for sure the guy never had COVID, but the whole thing reeks of bullshit. Like, that video was not a real video of him reuniting with his family. He's like showing you, it's all so fucking, he's showing you videos of him working out, and it's all so vain and like really weird how they're making themselves the story. Yeah, so he's claimed he's been quarantined this whole time. Then he has an altercation, which he talked about on a serious radio show. He has an altercation with some biker who saw him and was like, hey, you're Chris Cuomo. Aren't you supposed to be quarantined right now? Because he was like hanging out with other people and there was like an altercation. The guy went on Tucker Carlson's show to talk about it. So it's, a lot of the people who are up there and they're telling you that you need to not leave your home. And it's these people who are making millions of dollars a year who are absolutely fine are telling you, you know, the peons that you can't leave your home. And then of course, shocker, they don't follow the rules that they themselves advocate. So yeah, that was really something.
Is that any chance that turns into a Brian Williams moment for him where he just gets busted for being a total phony?
I don't know. We'll see. That would be great. That would be great. I guess we'll see. I don't really have any.
I was saying,
I hope so.
Pretending to be under quarantine and then going, being like, I'm bored. Let's go check out that house we're building is such a Fredo move.
Classic Fredo. Maybe he was feeling confident. Maybe he chugged a bunch of bleach and was like, all right, I'm going to be all right. That should hold off the COVID for a little bit.
Trump said that works. You just, yes. You got to throw, you start feeling the cough. You just chug a little bit of the, I don't think it was bleach. I think he repped a Lysol. I think that was the preferred brand.
I think you want to inject it is what you want to do. You really want to get it right in there, right into the system, right into the lungs.
I thought it was like an inhaler. You take the spray one like that.
All right. To be safe, I'm advising you got to do all three because it's not clear exactly what he meant. So just go with all three. You'll be fine. And then we'll clear this whole thing up. Was it like, it definitely is a little bit like, there's no question. There's like, it's kind of ridiculous how Donald Trump, and it's so not what you're used to out of any type of politician, which is always Trump. But that he'll just kind of start speculating. It's like there's no filter. So if something comes into his brain, he just starts saying it in the middle of a press conference, like, maybe this would work. Maybe we could do this. Maybe that'll. And it's very bizarre. But perhaps you could even say it's irresponsible and he shouldn't be doing that. But that little thing was such a microcosm of the whole Trump presidency. It's like, yes, okay, it's weird what Trump's doing. Maybe he should think through a little bit more what he says. But then the media's response to it, as if this is now a major concern that people are going to start chugging Lysol. I don't know what to say about it. It's been, listen, if anybody out there actually starts ingesting Lysol and dying from it, maybe it's okay that those people died. Like maybe this is natural selection.
Here's what was so insane about that moment. So he's sitting there and he goes, firstly, the light therapy thing, I saw an article on Zero Hedge. Twitter even took down the post from the company that's creating the light therapy. So somebody must have actually told him about that. That was not totally out there. What makes him a buffoon is that he's surrounded by doctors and he's like, okay, I'm so smart. Let me spitball some ideas for you. Maybe you guys haven't tried this stuff. But the lady that's sitting there is being a softy where she's not going, no, that definitely wouldn't work. She goes, well, I don't know if there's really, like, she's almost playing into, yeah, I'll hear Trump out. She's not being like, no, it doesn't work that way. But now here's the craziest part. So he goes, hey, here's some ideas for the doctors. I think you guys are going to go look into that. And the lady's like, yeah, we might look into that. And you might look into this. Yeah, we might look into that. And then the first reporter basically goes, well, now that you said, don't you realize that the media is going to report that you said basically inhale this and people are going to go do it? And if I was, it's like, well, then just don't do that. Don't go report that I just said inhale this stuff because I didn't. I'm talking to my team over here and giving them maybe some new ideas. And he even said, I'm not a doctor. Like he said like three times, basically, don't do this. I'm not a doctor. I'm just, you know, here's some interesting ideas for you. And the reporter in front of him goes, well, you realize we're going to go take that information and say it like this. And then people might do, well, then don't do that.
Yeah.
That would be reckless.
It really is. It's just something to watch. And the fact that when they're saying that this situation is so serious and so dire that we need to shut down the economy and, you know, the COVID-19 is just the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity. And it's something we've never dealt with. And yet you're still doing this type of reporting. It just shows what fundamentally unserious people they are and what dishonest people they are. Because no one actually believes that they were really concerned about what Trump said, that they thought that was dangerous. It's just that from the very beginning of this, they've been constantly looking to score points on Trump. And I just can't express how disgusting the entire corporate press is.
It's wild the extent to which that system works, that if they can get that headline out there, look, Trump's such a dummy that he suggested that people do it. Most people don't investigate and they just like, it just reinforces like, man, the guy who's in charge is really a dumb buffoon. And if we listened to him, we'd be in trouble. We got to get that guy out. And it's a good thing no one listens to him.
Yeah, no, that's that.
The propaganda works.
Yeah. And you have to kind of like, on some level, I am somewhat sympathetic to the people who fall for the propaganda. I mean, I remember saying this back with the whole Trump-Russia collusion nonsense that we completely got right throughout the entire 2 years, that it was a big story. All right, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Yo Kratom. If you're a fan of the show who's over 21 years old, check out Yo Kratom if you'd like to. It's the home of the $60 kilo. The Yo Kratom guys are great. Despite coronavirus and the world coming to a halt, they're still game to sponsor this show and ship you products. If you're not into Kratom, don't worry about it. However, if you're a fan of Kratom, you can save some money and stock up at YoKratom.com. It's the only place you'll find the $60 kilos. It's unheard of, and Yo Kratom has quality Kratom in the popular strains. If you're into Kratom and you don't want to go out looking for it, you don't want to touch the door handles at a gas station if they even are open, you can go get it for cheaper at YoKratom.com. So one more time, thanks to Yo Kratom for supporting the show. If you're into Kratom products, Yo Kratom is a one place where you can find the $60 kilos. These guys are one of the biggest Kratom wholesalers, and they created YoKratom.com so you can buy directly at incredible prices. All right, let's get back into the show. When people would say, you know, when people would, like I had nothing but contempt for journalists and politicians and people like who know this stuff to pretend that there was any truth to the idea that Donald Trump was involved in some conspiracy with Vladimir Putin. I mean, all you had to do was look at the evidence, and it was just obvious that this was bullshit from the very beginning. But I was somewhat sympathetic to people who fell for it, because if you're not, and as I've said before on the show, if everybody spent as much time thinking about politics as I do, we'd all starve to death. It's a really good thing that there's other people who focus on other areas of life, things that are far more important, you know, like food production and, you know, energy production and just like a million other things that allow us to live a non-caveman's lifestyle. That's really important. And so a lot of people, they don't focus on politics all day long, but they'll turn on CNN, which is the cable news network with really serious journalists up there. And one of these really serious journalists is interviewing Adam Schiff. Who's Adam Schiff? Let me read his title. He's the head of the House Intelligence Committee. Like, okay, that's a serious title. And there's Mr. Journalist is going, hey, we seriously think that Trump, you know, the sitting president is in bed with a hostile foreign power. And then the head of the House Intelligence Committee goes, I know it's true, and I've seen the evidence. And don't worry, you'll be seeing this evidence real soon. And for the average person to see that, be like, well, there's no way these serious people would be saying that if there wasn't some truth to it, right? So to the example you were using with Trump, most people, yeah, if you see this being reported, well, I don't know. I mean, they're reporting it as if it's fact. So I guess that's what the facts are. And that's how the press is so incredibly damaging. It's the fact that most people don't have time to dig deep into every issue themselves. And God bless them. They shouldn't be doing that, you know? But yeah, so they see this being reported by what's supposed to be serious people. And it's like, okay, I guess that there must be some truth to it, and there's not.
Yep. It works. It reinforces. It's the loudest voice in the room. And so, you know, just by the sheer volume and the amount, you know what I mean? The fact that it's the easiest thing just to go with, like, oh, that must be accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So one other story that caught my eye that I thought was interesting through this whole craziness was a Trump tweet where he said that he is signing an executive order to, I forget the exact language of the tweet, but he said something like, I'm signing an executive order to ban all immigration, you know, temporarily ban all immigration into the country. His, you know, the hardcore Trump base was all celebrating this. The anti-Trumpers were all screeching, this is the most horrible thing ever. This is what he always wanted to do, blah, blah, blah. It does bring up, you know, I mean, we could talk a little bit about the specific executive order, but it does bring up a broader, interesting question, which is that, you know, if you look at 2016, and really the politics of 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019, immigration was just a really huge issue. Really, really huge. I mean, in 2016, this was the central issue of Donald Trump's campaign, and he won on this issue. And it was really the central issue of the opposition to Trump, that this was the most horrible thing he had done, and kids in cages and the wall and all of this stuff. And I wonder what impact going forward the coronavirus will have on how people in the country see immigration. And I certainly think that, you know, like even when people were first saying, when this whole thing came out, that, you know, libertarianism is dead, and that's what this pandemic proves. There's no libertarians in a pandemic. The one caveat that I would give after saying that that's retarded is that I would say that there is a possibility that, like, open borders, minarchist libertarians, that philosophy has really suffered a big problem. You know, there's kind of been a dagger in that open borders philosophy, because you'd at least have to admit that under emergency situations, you can't just have open borders, right? Like, you wouldn't just want to allow people traveling in from an affected area. But you have the fact that there is a virus, right? Like, these are just the facts on the ground. There's a virus that came from a foreign country that was that people entered and brought into this country that shut down, ended up from the government reaction, shutting down the entire country. So people have died from it. You know, tens of thousands of people have died from this virus. And now we're going to be in a situation where, I don't know, somewhere between 30 and 50 million people are going to be out of work due to this situation. And so those are just the realities. Now, in that environment, how are people going to feel about immigration? You know, it's not crazy to presume that maybe they won't be so into the idea. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think people are going to be a lot more open to the idea of America first, whereas they were laughing off before, hey, this is just evil, keeping other people outside of the country, or opposing China for better trade agreements is just foolish and it's against the free market. Even you're like, you know, you're total leftist. We're like, why are we, come on, free markets. Why are we opposing China here? But all of a sudden, America first, like, guys, there's a lot of stuff going on out there that we can't control, and we got to make sure to keep America, America, and that we're safe here, and that we're operating in a way that we can all, you know, get along here. People are going to be on board for that. You're not going to hear big arguments.
Yeah, and it just doesn't, like, I don't know, it just doesn't, as somebody who formerly was for open borders, just the more I've even thought about it, it just doesn't, it doesn't make sense pragmatically or in theory. I mean, the idea, and this is one of the things that I find weird talking to libertarians who are open borders, where I'll even say things that I think they just don't really have great answers for. But if you just go, what's the ideal number of immigrants to come into the country every year? What do you think they should be? Ballpark it. Well, maybe under this status system, it's way higher than that. So isn't that a problem then? So, like, wouldn't we not want the, you know what, like, who's to say this is the level that it should be at? And the idea that, like, I don't really go for the, like, they took our jobs type line of thinking. I've never really been very sympathetic to that argument. The idea that if an immigrant can come in and outcompete you for your job, I mean, I don't think the government should make it more expensive to hire Americans, but I don't know. I just don't. The way I've always looked at things is kind of like everybody's always trying to outcompete everyone for their job anyway. But if somebody else is coming in and receiving benefits at all, when the government just kicked tens of millions of its own citizens out of work, I can certainly sympathize with that argument that really, since these are our elected representatives anyway, and they are operating off our tax dollars that they take from us, maybe their first obligation should be to the people who they were elected to represent or whatever. That certainly makes sense to me. And the idea of open borders in this type of situation just doesn't.
No argument for me. I think the big argument made against the open borders is that even if it's corrective, they are such purists, they don't want to call for any expansion of government powers. And so they feel that even if it would help, we can't be the ones saying the government should, you know, do something, because we don't want government. So it's against our foundation. And to me, it's like, I don't know, there's two sides of a coin. And so once government's done some things, if they're going to do something else to kind of correct it, in this case, it's social benefits. Yeah. You can't both have social benefits and open borders. I don't want the social benefits. Get rid of the social benefits. You can have the open borders. But right. like to say, hey, we're going to have the social benefits, but we're also not going to close the borders because that expands government. Well, they already did it with the social benefits. Yeah,
no, and also, and in addition, I tend to agree more or less. And in addition to the getting rid of the benefits, it's also that people should be allowed to discriminate. Like, fine, you could say open borders, but then if some company says, I don't want to hire, Mexicans, or I don't want to rent to Mexicans, or I don't want, then that should be legal too. Because and you can, and I'm sure some people do when they hear that, go, well, that's disgusting and racist and horrible. But you know what? The libertarian position is that relationships should be consensual. They should be voluntary on both sides. And it doesn't matter whether you find it disgusting or not. If one side is not consenting to a relationship, then that's wrong. Like, it doesn't matter if, you know, in the same way that you might think it's really, you know, like maybe there's some guy with like a great personality and a woman's just not interested because he doesn't have enough money. And you might think that's disgusting, but that's still her right to not want to date that guy. You know, like that's the idea of freedom. It's the idea that people consent to the relationships they have. And if you're just saying you want open borders and there's some community who doesn't want the immigrants there, if they're forced into those areas, then obviously that's going to breed resentment and those people aren't going to be happy about that policy. And I guess just, obviously you don't always want to base every policy around an emergency situation, but we're living through what's kind of an emergency situation right here. So people are seeing this like, yeah, actually diseases can be brought in from other countries who do weird shit that we don't do, you know? And like, not to say, I don't know how the fuck the coronavirus started. I don't know if it was in that lab or it was from bat soup or whatever, but you know, it's like, it came in from another culture. And what if, you know, I do think that quite often the open borders people, they like, you can, you know, like reducto ad absurdum their argument, and it's going to be a very tough place to be. Like if you said, a friend of mine who I think leans toward being an open borders libertarian, there's a very, very smart guy. And I remember he said to me on the phone at one point, we were just like talking about this, and he was like, you know, I don't really want the government doing anything to anyone. I don't like the government, you know, like stopping people at the border, and I don't like them rounding people up, but I don't know. He goes, I can think like I think the example he used was, he goes, let's say like India says they're, you know, goes to war with Pakistan and they're like, we're about to drop a nuke on Pakistan. And so 150 million, people from Pakistan all want to relocate to America right away. Are you saying there's no other choice. We just have to take them. And that's it. And now we're going to be basically a Muslim country with a Muslim culture. They can come in and vote in their Muslim way. Like that's, and we just have to lose our culture and our country. Like that's just it, because we have this principle. And if that's the case, if you can't say, well, no, in that situation, we should have some type of recourse, then maybe you are too married to your ideals. And like the whole thing about like, I'm as pure a libertarian as is out there. I'll challenge anyone. I don't care any room I'm in. I'm the most libertarian person in that room. But if your philosophy works on paper and doesn't work in practice, then your philosophy sucks. Then fuck it. Then I wouldn't want to be a part of it. The whole point of a good philosophy is that it works in practice. Otherwise, it's just a mental jerk off. Like there's no point in even thinking about this shit. And that's what I love about freedom, is that it actually works in reality. And I think just open borders with no caveats doesn't. Okay, anyway, with the fucking Trump thing, with the executive order that he signed, the funny thing about it is that it's what it always is with Trump. It's fucking much to do about nothing. Everybody always fucking, the pro-Trump people be like, yeah, we're making America great again. The anti-Trump people are, he's literally Hitler, you know, something close to that on both sides. And then you look at the reality and, oh, it's a temporary suspension of people who wanted permanent residence in America. This isn't going to make any big difference or any big dent in immigration. And workers can still come and go, and basically it's nothing. And they're all freaking out about this. But the pro-Trump people are wrong. You didn't get a huge victory here. The anti-Trump people are wrong. This isn't some horrible, evil policy that's going to change things. It's just rhetoric. It's just a tweet that'll go viral. It's much like him leaving the Paris Accord agreement or defunding the World Health Organization. You look into it. The Paris Agreement was non-binding to begin with. It really didn't mean anything that we left. The World Health Organization, it's not even that much money. They probably raised half of it just with that celebrity telethon thing that they had the other day. It's not going to change anything. This isn't the game changer that everyone is acting like it is.
You know, you probably have the best economic argument ever for building the border wall, which is we need to know that if we can shut down the country to outside forces at any given time, that we can do it, because even one person coming in could potentially be a biological threat. And look at the economic cost of us needing to shut down the country because of a biological threat. And I mean, the number on that, we just did the math. It's outstanding. So, you know, the cost of building the wall versus that, I don't think anyone's going to put forward that argument, but I would, if I was Trump.
Yeah. And listen, on top of that, it seems to me that it's very likely that people's response to this is going to be not too into wanting like a lot of immigration. And because of the viral stuff, because of the shutdown implications that you were just saying, and also because even though I said I'm not super sympathetic to this argument, but I do understand where a lot of people are. They're like, look, man, there's so many people out of work right now. What are we going to do? We're going to import more people looking for work. I mean, how is that going to help the situation for the average American?
Before it was just a theoretical, hey, that's evil to, you know, be keeping people out. That just sounds evil. They need, you know, but now it's not so evil because there's threat on the table. There's both the biological aspect of people, even though this didn't come from Mexico, but I think people are still just more receptive to, we got to be able to control who's coming in and out. And then what you were saying, the economic part of, hey, we got to take care of us and having jobs.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's what I see happening. And of course, that if it does come to fruition the way I think it will, that'll help Trump out a lot in his reelection campaign, because he's the one on that.
What about North Korea? You think the UN guy's dead?
Who the hell knows, right, man? Who the hell knows?
Baby.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I've heard reports that he's dead, reports that he's alive, that he's in a vegetative state. I don't fucking know. I know China's sending some doctors over there. So now we can maybe hope for some information from the good, honest Chinese government. Maybe they'll tell us what's going on. But I don't know. What do you think?
North Korea is above my pay grade. It's just it'll be most interesting to me if he's dead, then, like, you know, if someone who takes over next and if there's any change there ever.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't necessarily mean that things will get any better for those poor people in that country. But he's a real bad guy. So if he dies, that's good.
He didn't last very long. It's got to not look good for, you know, that they're the children of God. Like the last guys, they at least kept around for a little while. This guy was just a fat idiot.
Yeah, it's like, well, they were all gods, and then he was just kind of God's fat son who really didn't do very good or last very long. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Who the fuck knows? Who knows what's going on with that situation? It'll be interesting to see if we get some more info out of them over the next few days. All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, except I put out the last video of me being quarantined from my car. If you didn't realize, I finally got out of the car. So look that up. It's up on YouTube. I've tweeted it. Want to get some more views on the thing. I think that's about it.
Very good. Very good. I wanted, a couple things that I just want to say. Number one, I did a fundraiser on Facebook. And I've raised a little over $3,000 for City Meals on Wheels, which is a good organization. Brings food to people who need it in New York City. So if you want to help that out, that'd be really cool. We raised like $6,000 for a similar organization with Tom Woods and Michael Malice a few weeks back. So throw another 3 G's in there. And, you know, that made me feel nice that we could help some people out who might need it in this situation. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I tweeted about this the other day, but I'm going to try to set up some debates on part of the problem, bring some people in who I disagree with and argue, you know, some different things with them. I it looks like we're going to set up with Sagar and Jadi, who was the guy who was saying libertarianism is dead from that show Rising. I actually really like the show a lot. I think he's a real interesting guy, but we disagree on libertarianism. So I'm trying to set that up. So we'll discuss that on the show. And I threw this out before. I might do a debate with an open borders libertarian on some of this stuff. I'm open to doing other debates. I just kind of want to put out more content and do something a little bit different than we're used to doing. And that seemed like that might be fun. So if you have any ideas for debates, tweet them at me, tag the person in it, and we'll try to set it up that way. And if there's any other things you think we should do with the show, any other ideas, because, you know, I mean, obviously we're going to keep on top of the whole COVID situation, but let's see if there's other, you know, kind of things we could do to give you guys some entertainment and hopefully make it enjoyable. And
let's get podiums and powdered wigs, and we'll call the debate series that. And then I get a gavel. I'm not in the debates, but I do just get to gavel at random moments. And that'll be the ad breaks. No, I'll do the ad breaks. I'll gavel in the ad breaks.
All right, brother. Well, that sounds good. You can gavel in the ad breaks. You've got your, that's an essential job in the part of the problem world. All right, brother. Well, it's very good to talk to you, and we'll do another one of these soon. Be good, everybody. And thanks for listening. Peace.